Good morning, Jim.
It's good to see you, my friend.
Thank you for having me. And I love a caller like that starting the day with such joy in her heart.
Isn't that the truth?
And that's, I mean, I agree with her. There's nothing to worry about. There's,
you know, that's exactly right. We're only guaranteed one day at a time, and better take it and make the most of it. It sure beats the alternative, as I said. So
live in the moment.
Yes, sir, it is. Well, I'm blessed to be here to do the show. I have not sat in with Dr. Edwards, but I listen to him back here in my office most time when I'm here in the station, and got a lot of good things to say. I remember Dr. Wright real well. He was a dear friend back in the day, and got to know him real close, and we certainly appreciate you for what you do.
Well, thank you. I never got to meet Dr. Wright. I've met his wife, but
he was a piece of work. Just a great gentleman.
I've got to visit with a lot of his former patients, and of course, I've got his books, and I've read those. And every time I read his books, I think, wow, how did he know all this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, 20 or 30 years, whatever that was. Some of the same stuff we're preaching now in functional medicine that most doctors still don't know. So it's pretty amazing. I wish I could have known him.
Well, Dr. Edwards, what made you get in? And like I said, I may ask questions you've already told, so please bear with me. And if you just tell me to shut up and let you talk, I'll do that too. I'm easy to get along with. So.
No.
But how did you get into this field? You're a young man.
Well, thank you. I feel older every day with 5 kids.
I've had 4. We were talking about that off mic. But like I say, I still say it beats the alternative.
Yes, it does. Those kids are a blessing.
If I'd known grandkids so good, though, I wouldn't have had kids, I promise.
I'll tell you what. When we had the first grandbaby parents, they beelined it right to that baby right past me and my wife.
Yeah.
And they've never looked back.
No.
I mean, they barely even hug us anymore.
There you have it. We've got to save those hugs.
They love those grandkids. But what got me into doctoring to begin with was really my granddad's. Both my granddads were small-town country doctors in the town I grew up in.
Where's that?
Which is Belton, which now isn't that small.
I got a lot of memories of Belton. I stationed at Fort Hood, Texas, 2.5 years.
Yes, sir, Fort Hood. My dad would take me there for go to work with Dad Day in the summer. He sold Xerox machines.
Really? On base?
Yeah, Fort Hood was probably his biggest client.
I can imagine. Oh, it was small. I was there from I was there in 62 and 63 and 64.
Oh, wow.
So it was big.
Yeah.
I was back over there several years ago, Doctor, and it's unbelievable.
Well, I knew it was big, but we were coming back home. We were in Fort Worth at a rodeo this weekend, driving back home, stopped at a gas station somewhere along the way, and you know how they have the maps there in the gas station. I think it was in Snyder, and I just happened to glance at that Fort Hood property. They had it outlined, and I mean, it is a big chunk of property.
And it's 400 something acres, isn't that right, or more than that, or it's more than that.
It's way more than that. They've gobbled up a whole lot of land.
It looks as
big as a county when you look at the
map. Oh, it does.
North
Fort Hood, you know, that's where the terrible accident was.
Yeah.
Boy, I remember going over there a lot. That's where they used to have the National Guards all the time come in, and they would be over at North Hood, and we'd go over south, the main fort.
My dad would go try to sell Xerox machines, and I'd climb on the tanks and look at the Apache helicopters, and it was a lot of fun. But so my dad won a doctor, but both my granddads were in Belton, and watching those guys work, growing up watching those guys, I broke my arm one day and went to my dad's office to get the x-ray because the x-ray machine at my mom's dad's office was broken. But my mom really wanted her dad to set the arm, so we went to one office to get the x-ray. Had to drive across town, across the railroad tracks, and every time we'd hit those tracks in that bone, my bone would just ache. But then we went back to my mom's dad to get the bone set. And so we used both my dad's dad and mom's dad for all our medical needs. But just watching those guys growing up, taking care of patients at the nursing home, doing house calls, Friday night football games, doing the sports physicals for the local school. Just being a doctor for the whole family from birth till grave really intrigued me. And really I think what I appreciated was the impact they had on people's lives.
You bet. That's great.
So that got me interested in being a doctor. I went to Baylor undergrad, ended up changing my major 5 times because when I was at Baylor, I started getting cold feet on the whole medical school thing because it was going to take so long. 4 years undergrad, 4 years of medical school, an internship, then residency after that, and then I'd be 30-something years old by the time I got out of school, and I'd be in a whole lot of debt.
Lots of debt.
So changed my major 5 times looking for something else to do, but never got satisfied, so kept going back to medicine, and the Lord just finally laid it on me one night. I was whittling it down to law school or medical school, and he made it clear to me that it was supposed to be medical school, so went to UT Houston. with the intent of always training to be a small-town doc, mm-hmm. where I could do everything, do colonoscopies and take out gallbladders and appendixes, deliver babies, do C-sections, kind of like my granddad's, do everything. When I was in Houston, every chance I got to do an elective rotation outside of the Texas Medical Center, I would go. And so I'd travel out to Fort Davis and Alpine. There's a doctor there, Dr. Pierce and Dr. Lukey. And they were kind of like my granddad's. They were old school GPs that took out gallbladders and delivered babies and did all that.
GPs.
So every time I could, I'd go out there and shadow them and rotate with them. Anyways, graduated from Houston, went to Waco for residency, and they trained me real well to be a small town doc. And so traveled to Post, Texas, Garza County Health Clinic after I left Waco. And
really?
I was the doctor there for 7 years.
When was this?
2005 till 2012.
Okay.
And so that's when the clinic was struggling when we got there. They didn't have a doctor in the county at the time, and the clinic was operated by a nurse prac, and just they were struggling to make ends meet. In fact, I think they were losing money every month, and the taxpayer was making up the difference.
Mm-hmm.
But we got in there and had real good community support, and the town got behind us and had some good nurses and office manager and all that. And
Post, Texas.
And so we started making a run on it and did real good. Made lots of money for everybody and took care of the people the right way and did house calls. And
I knew. I hate to interrupt you again, but my bride is from Post.
Oh, really?
And her brother still lives there, and we'll talk about that off mic.
Okay.
Get through. But you've taken care of him before. And I knew that name. Small worlds, we was talking before with Mike.
Yeah.
If you stay long enough, you're going to probably...
In Lubbock in particular, it seems like all of West Texas, some sibling or somebody from the small town will come to Lubbock and set roots, but the spokes going out of Lubbock seems like a bicycle tire, all the spokes to all the small towns.
So it really does.
Everybody knows everybody, but Post, Texas was real good to us.
Great, great town.
Did real well there. They built a new clinic for us because mm-hmm. we were doing so well right there off 84.
Yep.
So everything was just going smooth as could be. The $1 million clinic was paid for in a year, and a year after that, $1 million in the bank of the taxpayer health care taxes were...
You're going to know my daughter before we get here after we get up there. You're going to know my daughter. It's a small... I'm sitting here. I know you want to talk about other stuff, and we're going to. We'll get off of this. But it's just amazing that I even brought that up, and now...
Yeah,
we're going after we get off mic. I'll tell you, but it's
okay.
Small world.
That's interesting.
It's just a pleasure. I enjoy listening to you.
I'm kind of doing this setup because people don't understand. You know, how could you be doing this different kind of doctor now when mm-hmm. things are so successful? Your granddad's heritage, Post, Texas, Garza County, new clinic. You know, digital X-ray and state-of-the-art lab and great staff, and we're in the 90th percentile of the MGMA, that's Medical Group Management Association. They're statistics for the business side of medicine, for the number of visits, the number of procedures, the charges, collections, all that. We were at the top 90th percentile of the whole country.
Really?
In what we were doing on the business side, on the money mm-hmm. side. So everything was going super smooth. I'm 7 years into it, raising my family there, living my dream, following in my granddad's footsteps. But the problem was that everybody was getting sicker. Nobody was getting well. And what I mean by that is someone would come in with some symptom, whether that be reflux or headaches or high blood pressure or mm-hmm. diabetes, mm-hmm. and I'd give them the prescription I was supposed to give them, you know, a pill.
Sure.
And their numbers would come down. Their blood pressure number would come down, or their sugar number would come down, or their reflux would go away. But a few months down the road or a year or two down the road, they'd come back, and their numbers would be high again, so I'd increase their dose. Or I would give them a second pill. And so over 7 years, I could see...
The Band-Aid deal, huh?
Yeah, these patients are coming in for their second, third, fourth, fifth pill. And, you know, a guy that I started treating for high blood pressure a couple years down the road, now I'm treating him for high blood pressure and diabetes. A couple years down the road after that, he had a little stroke. And so everyone's just progressively worsening, even though I was doing what I was supposed to do.
Sure.
But I didn't know what else to do. I was doing what I was trained to do. I mean, of course, deep down, I think everybody realizes our diet and our lifestyle is the primary culprit for most Western disease, and statistics bear that out. From cancer to diabetes, it's diet and lifestyle is the culprit. But we weren't trained in diet and lifestyle. In medical school, I got 1 hour of nutrition in 4 years of school. So even though I had this gut instinct that diet and lifestyle was the main issue with my patients, I didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say, didn't have time to say it even if I knew what to say. Because I averaged 7 minutes a patient. That's what primary care doctors have to do now to make ends meet, especially in a small town where you have a lot of Medicaid and a lot of Medicare. You've got to see volume, meaning you got to see a fast pace every 7 minutes. So I would just kind of throw out there the little dietary recommendations of eat less and exercise more. and that was about it. And, of course, that did real well. Anyways, so then we speed up to 2012-ish. My nurse practitioner who's working for me at the time met a functional medicine doctor on a whim, or actually it's probably a divine appointment arranged by God, I think. So my nurse practitioner at the time was sick with a chronic disease, and this functional medicine doctor helped him to become symptom-free and off meds and just feeling a lot better overall. And so that really opened my eyes when I saw that my own nurse practitioner got well by doing some aggressive diet and lifestyle things. So I called that doctor up to inquire of him exactly what is this that he's doing, and he explained it's integrative or functional medicine. So I started going to these conferences of functional medicine. There was one in Austin 2 weeks ago. Monday through Friday, every 8 hours a day for 5 days, I sent two of my buddies that I trained with in residency that have been sending me patients because they've seen the results we get with functional medicine. This doctor's in Dallas. He's been sending me his patients that are tough. And I told him, just go to the functional medicine conference. Start doing this on your own. So we went to that conference 2 weeks ago, and on his drive back from Austin to Dallas, he was calling me. To quote him, he said, "Ben, this was a game-changing week. I'll never practice the same again." And that's what every doctor...
First statement.
Yeah, that's what every doctor tells me that either goes to the conference or comes to see us as a patient and or shadows with us and learns what we do. Because I think all medical students went to medical school to really help people.
Sure.
And we learned one way to help. We learned to manage chronic disease. What we did not learn is how to reverse chronic disease or prevent it. And what functional medicine does is do that exact thing, reverse and prevent. So I think every doctor would practice this way if they knew it existed. The problem is we don't know it exists. We're too far down the road of Band-Aid treatment, symptomatic treatment, prescription drug to treat a symptom, not the cause. And so all the doctors are down this road, all the patients are down this road, the general public, the government, health insurance companies, everybody's way too far down this road of, our problem is we're lacking a pharmaceutical pill in us. And that's not the problem. So once I saw my nurse practitioner get well, I started going to these conferences, hearing this truth, and it's evidence-based science. I mean, these are published journal studies that these guys are quoting. This isn't just some kind of quack guy off the corner, off the beaten path, putting on a lecture. These are real-deal kind of PhD, MD, lot smarter than me kind of guys. So I'll go to those conferences. Still, have trouble really processing it all and trying to figure out how do I practice this way. Still not totally convinced, so I sent my 10 toughest patients, my 10 sickest patients, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel syndrome, brittle diabetics, the toughest of the tough that everybody had been working on. The specialists here in Lubbock had been working on them. I'd been working on them for 7 years. So I knew these patients. They were tough, sick people. Sent them to this functional medicine doctor, and they all came back well. Most of them all the way well, like off medications, normal blood, blood sugar normal.
Fibromyalgia
normal. I mean, really? It's symptom-free. I mean, we're talking guys with an A1C. A1C is your three-month blood sugar average. In conventional medicine, we like to keep that below a 7. I would say non-diabetic would be considered 5.7 or 5.5 or below. So, but below 7 is kind of the target for diabetics. And this diabetic, I had an A1C of 13, which is wildly out of control. And in a matter of months, he's down in the 5s and he's off his 4 different diabetes pills. So when that happened, that to me was the biggest game changer because I realized, half my patients in post are diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
The other half are going to be diabetic. I was looking at a stat this morning. In 1980, there were 0 reported cases of type 2 diabetes in adolescents. By 2010, 57,638 cases. from 0 to 57,000 in from 1980 to 2010, 30 years. Well, I was seeing some of those adolescents in Post, Texas. I diagnosed a 7-year-old down there in Post with type 2 diabetes. Mm. And so when that happened, when this gentleman came back with his A1C had dropped in half or a little more than half, and he's off his medicines, that I just couldn't morally or ethically, I could not ignore that. I could not ever go back and turn my back on what had happened to those 10 patients. So the rest is kind of history, I guess you could say. I felt like this was something that was truth, and I needed to learn it, and I needed to offer it. And if only 5 people in Garza County wanted it, great. Those would be 5 lives that were improved, and
there you have
and
it.
The other lives I could still treat with with medications, treat those symptoms. That's no problem. That's, looking back, what I call kind of easy cookbook medicine.
Well, it's not just kicking a can down the road type deal.
Right.
That's what it sounds like to me.
Exactly. And it takes a whole lot of patient compliance. But to get patient compliance, to get patients to buy in, you got to teach them. You got to educate them. You got to get your pen and pencil out and your paper and or your whiteboard, and you sit there and you draw and you explain and you teach. And the root word actually of doctor or physician is teacher. That's what now I see is what we should all be doing is teaching our patients what about their diet and lifestyle is out of order, and show them on the chalkboard, connect the dots for them. When mm-hmm. you eat this, here's what happens to your cells at the cellular level. Here's what you're doing, and this is why your insulin receptor is not working, so and therefore your blood sugar stays high. And we label that diabetes, but diabetes is just a label. Here's what's really happening. And you just teach. It's awesome.
Well, how many doctors nowadays, though, will take the time to do that, doctor, because they're going to work themselves out of a job, I guess they look at it. If I start doing this, I'm
exactly
not going to have this patient very long. So.
Yeah, it's not many doctors because of that right there. What happened to me, I could see the writing on the wall. Mm-hmm. I mean, and remember, I've gone 7 years from taking this clinic from losing $5,000 a month when I got there to making $10,000 extra a month. So.
Fantastic.
I mean, so everyone's I know how to make the money, and the way you make the money is you see a patient every 7 minutes, and the more procedures
sure.
you can do, you make more money. And procedure just means anything you can use your hands. So if I use my hands to pluck earwax out of their ear canal, that pays good money. If I use my hands to biopsy a mole, if I use my hands to do stitches, if I use my hands to set a bone, anything that requires the use of my hands gets paid high dollar in our American medical system. Just using my brain, just sitting there and talking to a patient about diabetes or high blood pressure, that gets paid very, very little. So I had that system figured out, so that's why we were making so much good money in Post, because I was doing a blend of all the above, lots of procedures and lots of talking too, but I would do enough volume, we made lots of money. So when I saw that the real deal, the way to get people well, was spending an hour with them teaching.
That's unheard of.
It was, to me, I knew we were going to lose money. I mean, there's no way I could see 40 patients a day if I'm going to teach them for an hour each. So I would give the patient the option. If they came in with diabetes or reflux or whatever, I would get a piece of paper, and I'd draw a line down the middle of it, and on one side I'd say, here's your conventional answer that I learned in medical school, Nexium or mm-hmm. Metformin, mm-hmm. whatever mm-hmm. pill it was. And then on the other side of the paper, I'd write down some bullet points of teaching points that we could go over to teach them how to reverse their reflux or diabetes. But I told them, it's your choice. I just hand them the paper, and I'd say, you pick, let me know whichever one you want to do. And I said, but if you pick that you want to get to the root of it and fix it, this non-conventional answer on this side of the paper, you need to tell my girls at the front desk when you check out to do a follow-up appointment for 1 hour, because that's how long it's going to take, instead of a 10-minute follow-up visit. So I would tell my patients that, and I didn't know how it'd go. I didn't know how many of them would want the hour-long follow-up. Mm-hmm. But I knew some might, so I went ahead and went to the board, the healthcare board, and I went to my office manager, and I basically said, hey, here's what I'm doing, and I'm doing it because it's the right thing to do, and we're going to lose money. Because if enough people choose an hour follow-up, I'm going to lose money, or the clinic's going to lose money. There's just no way around it. I can't work 24/7 to make up for that difference. And so I won't get into all the details, but basically that model can't work in a Medicaid, Medicare, insurance reimbursement. The way we're currently set up in America to reimburse doctors, you cannot spend an hour with a patient. So we had to split ways. and they brought in another physician, and I moved to Lubbock and met a gentleman here just down the road at VTS, Doug Allen, who owns VTS, Vertical Turbine Specialist. It's a manufacturing company. Doug was looking for a doctor who would get to the root of a problem and fix it as the first option, and if it didn't work or the patient couldn't do it, then go to the second option, which would be your prescription pad.
Sure.
So he was basically looking for me, and we met, and we could tell we were looking for each other because he said, I've got square footage, and I want to build you a clinic, and I'm not going to charge you a dime for rent or for building
it. Price is right.
Yeah, I'll pay your utilities, your cleaning fee. Basically, he said, you'll have no overhead. You just come and watch over my guys and see all your private patients on the side. You know, that's fine. Have your clinic, do a private clinic. So that's what I did. Opened up there, taking care of his employees.
In-house doctor.
That's right, yep.
That just blows me away.
And he won Businessman of the Year Award a few years back for the way he does his wellness program at his company. Because before I got there, he brought in a chiropractor and he gives all his guys a treatment once a week. He brought in a massage therapist. He brought in a nutritionist and built a kitchen and a dining room for his guys. He feeds them breakfast and lunch that are healthy. He brought in he built a gym on site and brought in a personal trainer to conduct workout classes throughout the day. So all his guys get to eat healthy on the clock, get a chiropractor treatment on the clock, get a massage on the clock, and do a workout all on the clock. So Doug Allen been doing that for many years, way before I got there. Basically his guys were pretty healthy and didn't really need to see me that often. So that opened my schedule up to be able to see the general public. So we've been seeing 99% of who we see is people from eastern New Mexico, west Texas, panhandle kind of region.
If you keep talking, we might be kin folks. Now I've just found out I know a real close personal that works at SIS.
Oh,
or
really?
VIS, I mean.
Really?
Yeah. My son just texted me and said, I won't call his name. Small world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, every day, you know, my wife's family's from her dad's side of the family's from Turkey, Texas.
So Turkey, Texas.
A lot of connections there. And then the mom's side's from Colorado. But I'm from Central Texas, so I don't really know a lot of these folks out here.
We started out in Paris, Texas, and we migrated to Lubbock. So.
Really? Well, that's kind of the long answer to your question of how did I get into this. But in one short line, I would say it's moral and ethical obligation to do what I see as the righteous way to practice medicine, which is get to the root of the problem.
That's so refreshing. So refreshing. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break here. It's just unreal. Like I said, we may keep talking and we make second cousins somewhere before all this is said and done, Dr. Edwards. Everybody hang on outside right now. It's warming up, folks. Sunny, 75 degrees right here at AM 580. Good morning. We're back with you, folks. We should record the off-air stuff, Dr. Edwards. We did have as I said, we know some other folks down there. It is a small world. But hey, folks, sunny, 79 degrees here in Lubbock. Absolutely gorgeous day. Should see about 95 today. Don't think we're going to get to that 100 the next few days. Looks like that little front that came through. Nice little shower yesterday morning. Wake up too. So,
well, we were in Fort Worth, and it reminded me of why I've learned to love West Texas so much.
You went to rodeo. What rodeo was that?
It was an all-around ranch rodeo. My wife's brother, his team won the all-around ranch rodeo last year.
Oh, really?
And a $50,000 paycheck.
So
they were back to defend their title this year.
What ranch?
Third place. They were the five flat. It's somewhere around Abilene.
Okay. I know they had. Okay.
There were 24 ranches represented there. 24 teams were there. So it was a good time. But the humidity, that's what I was.
Oh.
That just got me big time. So I'm glad. I don't mind 95 degrees as long as there's no
humidity. It's a whole lot of difference between here and Fort Worth now. So I can go down there and, like you said, all that concrete. But who announced the rodeo? You know?
No, I didn't catch it.
Wasn't Bob Tallman, was it? He does a lot. Bob, dear friend of mine.
I don't know. I really don't.
All right. Well, let's talk medicine. That's what you're here for. We need to go have lunch and have fun so we can visit. But what is it? I know you had something to talk about today more than what we've done, but anything you want to bring out before we have to get out of here?
Well, I was planning on talking a little bit about diabetes because it is so prevalent. I just mentioned that statistic a while ago. 1980, zero adolescents with diabetes, and now over 57,000 a year with type 2 diabetes. So it's just rampant. I mean, and if you use a stricter standard, which we do in our clinic, if your A1C is above 5.3, 5.4, we consider you to be diabetic, and it's we don't really believe in kind of borderline or pre-diabetic or any of that stuff. Either you can handle your sugar or you can't. It's kind of like either you're pregnant or you're not pregnant. It's no in between. And the reason we use that strict standard is because we start to see damage done throughout the cells, the blood vessels, the organs of the body if blood sugar stays above that average A1C of 5.3. And so it's a rampant problem. I think we're only going to see the statistics grow, you know, year by year by year. Because the issue is insulin resistance. And what I mean by that is insulin is a hormone. That all of us make, our pancreas makes it, and this hormone, all hormones in fact work, what hormones do is send signals, they're messaging signals, so they're basically typing a message to your DNA to do something. So it's kind of like you're texting yourself all day long to do something. When you secrete a hormone out, it'll go click into its receptor, kind of like a key into a keyhole. So the hormones are the keys, the keyholes are the receptors sit on the cell membrane. So the insulin receptor or keyhole is on your cell membrane. And the whole problem with type 2 diabetes is it's not that you're not making insulin, it's that your keyhole is bent out of shape. So you've got all these keys floating around, but they can't fit into the keyhole.
Fit into the keyhole.
Somebody has taken a sledgehammer and beat your keyhole out of shape to where your keys can't fit in it. Mm-hmm. We call this insulin resistance. So you have the hormone there, you have the key, insulin there, but your keyhole is just messed up. And so what messes up the keyhole turns out to be about almost 100% diet and lifestyle related. So therefore, I would say type 2 diabetes is a diet and lifestyle disease. And well proven by many, many, many studies. One very interesting one that I always like to quote is the Pima Indians. They're a Native American bunch down in southeast Arizona. Zero cases of type 2 diabetes reported in the Pima Indian tribe in their history pre-World War II. Today, their type 2 diabetes rates are 50%. The reason I like to quote that study is because that tribe has the same basic genetic makeup as they've had all these generations. Mm-hmm. So everybody wants to blame the genes. The genes are at fault, so therefore I have no control over my health, which is totally wrong. That's been completely debunked. The genes can be turned on and off, and it's you and your diet and lifestyle that control your genes. That's called epigenetics. We talked about that in an earlier show. But I love that study from the Pima Indians because it basically highlights that point, that these guys changed their diet and lifestyle post-World War II, and diabetes type 2 started creeping in to the point now that it's 50% of the tribe. Mm-hmm. So to reverse that, medication's never going to reverse that. You've got to go back to pre-World War II diet and lifestyle. And if they would all do that, type 2 diabetes would not be an issue anymore with the Pima Indians. And I would submit that that would be the case for all the Americans, just Native Americans, in that one tribe. Now, there will be more susceptibilities based on genetics, but those are just susceptibilities. Again, you control your genes, so you can turn genes on and off based off your diet and lifestyle. So people that eat a native diet, and what I mean by that is Weston A. Price was a dentist back in the 1920s. He started noticing, as a dentist, he started noticing more, of course, more cavities were starting to creep in, but also he was seeing more cancer, more heart attacks, more high blood pressure. Mm-hmm. Then in the 1890s and 1900s, 1910s. So around 1920, he told his wife, hey, we need to figure out what's going on. These Americans are starting to get sicker. Let's sail around the world and go to visit tribes and countries, native populations that don't have cancer, heart attacks, and high blood pressure and cavities, and see what they're doing different. Let's go study healthy people. So he did that. He traveled the globe. I think it was 20 different countries. The rest of his life, he and his wife did this. He wrote a book that summarizes these years and years and years of observation and study. The book is called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It's a great read. But the summary of that book basically is people that eat a native diet don't have Western diseases, anything from cavities to cancer and heart attacks. In native diet, I mean, the Eskimos up in the Arctic weren't eating the same thing as the Indians down in Peru were eating, weren't eating the same things as the folks in the Orient were eating, weren't eating the same things as the Maasai African tribe was eating. Mm-hmm. So these are all different cultures, different types of foods were available in their locale. But Dr. Price's point was that each group was eating their native diet. So the Eskimos were eating a lot of whale fat and other seafood. The Maasai tribes were eating, you know, animal fat and blood and doing some scavenging, but mostly it was animal. A lot of the Native Americans were doing more plant-based diets. So it was a wide variety of diets, but they were all healthy. So really what he concluded was we need to get away from the Western diet. And the things that were starting to be brought into the Western diet at that time were processed grains and processed sugars. Soon after that was some adulterated fats. We traded pig fat, you know, good old lard and real butter, started trading it out for margarine and Crisco and some processed oils and adulterated oils. I talked about the insulin receptor keyhole sitting in the cell membrane. Well, the cell membrane is made of fats. So when you eat healthy fats that are not adulterated, not oxidized, then your cell membrane is a healthy cell membrane. This is one of the things that will contribute to type 2 diabetes, is eating the wrong kind of fat. If you eat unhealthy, oxidized, very unstable, adulterated fats, then your cell membrane will be comprised of those fats, and when they're inflamed, it changes the shape of the proteins, which the proteins are the receptors or keyholes. So you have keyholes bent out of shape just based off the fact that you did not eat the right fats. That's one of the things that will contribute to that. So we encourage people to get back on a more native diet, whether you follow a specific diet like the Weston A. Price diet that is very, culture-based, right. Local food type stuff, or paleo, that's kind of an ancestral diet that basically is focused on vegetables, organic meats, kind of grass-fed meats, animals that are eating what traditionally they've always eaten. There's different diets, but basically I like to tell people eat God food, not man food. If God made the food, eat it. If man's done something to it, it doesn't mean it's off limits. It just means if man has changed God's food, it's your obligation to study that closely and decide, is that beneficial for my cells or not? And that's one thing that's changed in my life the past 3 or 4 years since I've learned all this, is everything that goes in between my teeth, it enters my mouth, I'm actually kind of pausing for just a millisecond and thinking, is this something that's going to benefit my cells? And if it's not, then I'm not going to want to eat very much of it or maybe any of it. And the majority of what goes between my mouth, into my mouth, needs to be something I say, oh yeah, this is something God made that benefits my cells. Because every disease at the root of it is cellular inflammation, whether you're talking cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, autism, chronic sinusitis, gout, you've got cellular inflammation. So cellular inflammation typically comes from a lack of some God food or an overabundance of some man food that you've put into your body. And there can be toxins too outside of food, but food is the big one.
Food's a big one.
Oxygen is another, obviously God designed us to have oxygen in the body. We tend to all be less oxygenated, and when you're less oxygenated, the cells become inflamed.
I'm a prime example of that, Doctor.
Yeah.
I told you that a while ago.
Yeah, we were talking off air about CPAP, which I'm sure a lot of you listeners out there know. CPAP is just oxygen or under pressure. You wear a mask at night and you sleep in this mask so it can pressurize the air that's going into your airway, because you need to open up that airway because there's a physical obstruction or compression of that airway. So you just narrowed your airway down so you don't get enough air in at night. And if you don't have enough air in at night, then your oxygen levels drop all night long. And if your oxygen levels drop, obviously your cells can't function right. That can manifest. The symptoms of that can be fatigue. You wake up and you're not rested. It can be headaches the next day. It can be high blood pressure. Eventually heart failure, because your heart muscles having to work harder move what oxygen you do have in your body, move it all around to all your, from your tips of your toes to your top of your head. Your heart's got to work harder, so it puts more of a strain on the heart. And over time, that'll lead to heart failure. So when you see sleep apnea and you see all these different diseases that you can get because of sleep apnea, what we're really saying is it's a lack of oxygen. And that goes back really to functional medicine, is what we do every day, is look at what is the body lacking that it needs, or what is it overexposed to that it doesn't need. And it's that basic thing right there. But there's other things that will impede oxygen, not just physical obstruction in your airway. There are 7 different cell membranes that oxygen has to pass through from when you breathe it into your lung all the way down into where it's getting into the mitochondria, which are the little machine factories inside your cells that produce your energy. Every cell in your body has to have ATP for energy to do what it needs to do, whether that be your eyeball cell, your hamstring cell, your heart muscle cell. It all needs ATP. That's the fuel for your cell to function. So ATP is produced by oxygen getting mixed with glucose in the presence of thyroid hormone, and that combustion happens just like in your engine. You have the air line bringing the air, the fuel line bringing the fuel. You have your spark plug providing the spark, and combustion occurs. You produce energy. You also produce heat. So that's what happens inside the mitochondria. The fuel is glucose from the food you eat. The air is oxygen from what you breathe. And the spark plug is thyroid hormone. So all three of those combine to produce ATP, your energy molecule. Well, oxygen, the oxygen component of that, it's got to cross 7 different cell membranes between your lung and that mitochondria. Well, all those cell membranes are made of fats. And as I mentioned a while ago, if it's the wrong kind of fat, then it's harder for that oxygen. There's certain fats that attract oxygen, will grab it out of the blood and move it across that cell membrane into the cell. And there's certain fats that don't grab oxygen very well. So if you're eating the wrong fats, then you have the wrong cell membranes, and it's harder to oxygenate your cell. So it gets a little complicated if you try to dig down into all the science, but in a nutshell, for the layperson, I just tell them, eat God food, not man food. Move around a little bit every day. That's the way God designed us to get oxygen. When you sit in a chair all day, you're not breathing as deeply. You're not going to oxygenate as well. And people think, oh, really? Just get up and walk around, and that's really going to prevent all these different diseases? Yes, it does. And there are many studies that show it. In fact, last year, 2015, there was this onslaught of studies that were published that talked about sitting disease. They came up with a new disease name called sitting disease because people, the statistics show people that sit in a chair for more than 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours a day, their risk for cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, almost you name the disease, the Western disease, would increase. And people that would get up and intermittently move throughout the day, they would have less of these diseases. And even if you sat in a chair 8 hours and went and worked out at the gym on the ninth hour at the end of the day, you went and did your 45-minute treadmill, that didn't make up, for all the sitting you did all day long. And what that boils down to, a big part of it's the oxygen. When you move around, you breathe a little deeper.
Well, certainly.
There's a lot of oxygen therapies people know about. Hyperbaric oxygen is probably the most famous one. When you can super oxygenate a damaged cell, like a stroke victim or a wound that won't heal. And part of the reason a wound won't heal is because it doesn't have good blood flow
to it.
It doesn't have good oxygen and nutrients getting to it. So, I mean, this all kind of makes common sense. Cells need nutrients, and they need oxygen. And the problem is they're getting the wrong nutrients in the Western diet, and they're not getting quite enough oxygen either. So that's how we see these just dramatic results. And what I love about the testimonials on our website, these are just real West Texas people giving their testimony of how they reversed or became symptom-free in whatever disease they had. But the beauty of it is all of them did basic stuff. They changed their diet. They moved around a little bit. What I call the four pillars of health: nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace. You got to be at peace instead of stressed out. And these folks will just have dramatic, dramatic results. And it just blows my mind. I mean, we had a lady just last week come in for her 2-month follow-up. She came in initially just to do an intake with our nurse. And the nurse basically sets the stage for the basic foundational things we do, nutrition primarily. And this young gal, 27 years old, been having diarrhea and nausea every single day for the past 12 months. She'd been sick for 7 years, but those symptoms daily for 12 months were completely resolved in 2 months of doing these foundational things. And we see that time after time after time after time just by giving the body what it needs and avoiding what it doesn't. So part of the hang-up, I think, from all doctors doing this, of course, the big part's the money and the time. You can't do this one-hour visit in a traditional clinic, so you have to get out of that traditional clinic. That takes a leap of faith because you don't know how that's going to work business-wise and money-wise.
It'd be scary for a doctor. I can see that.
Yeah, so I don't blame them at all, and that's one of my missions is to help create a system that helps to make that transition a lot easier. But then on top of that, it's doctors having to renew their mindset, their way of thinking.
Sure.
You know, 4 years of medical school and all this residency and internship training on top of it and all these hundreds of thousands of dollars I invested in this education. And you're telling me all you're doing is selling your patient to eat God food, not man food, and move around a little bit? Yeah. I don't believe it, and it's hard
My grandmom and granddaddy didn't get as old as they were by getting pills all the time and all that. So, you know, yeah, I know times change. I understand that. But, boy, what you said just sinks in.
Well,
if I'd have, you know, I told you I'm on the sleep machine.
Yeah.
I believe if I'd have known what I've learned from you and just a little bit, not real exercise, I'm wrestling, but getting up and walking around just doing things, because I have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
And I've had double bypass and I've had stents, but my last little stay, I think the good Lord was looking and said, hey, and I got a great doctors, I really do, that said, hey, you can clear a lot of this up by just breathing.
Yeah.
And they did. They put me on the machine.
Yep.
And I would be a spokesperson for it now if you've gone as far as I have.
Oh, that's
got sleep apnea.
Yeah, that sleep apnea machine can be life-saving.
Don't take it lightly if they say sleep apnea. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, even though we're considered more alternative or nutrition doctors, if we see someone has sleep apnea, that's one of the first things we'll do, because we know if they get oxygen in their body, everything else is going to work right. And eventually they can maybe get off the CPAP.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping to do.
Yeah. I'm not anti-CPAP or anti-pharmaceuticals. I'm anti-preaching that's the only answer.
Sure.
And the reason is because the outcomes are so poor.
Well, then you've had great results, and it works. Your testimonials. We need to let them know how to get a hold of you, Doctor. I mean,
Our website's probably the best way, Veritas, which is Latin for truth. When I learned all this, I was laying there in bed one night talking to my wife and said, how can this, it's true. It's hard to still wrap my mind around it, but it is true. And so we need to make a statement for truth. And so Veritas, V is in Victor, E-R-I-T-A-S, and then medical, veritasmedical.com. And there's a lot of information on there. You can watch the testimonials of our patients and just learn more about what we do, all our contact information on there, email and phone. And like I said, part of what I'm trying to do is pioneer a new system, a new healthcare delivery system. Most patients shouldn't need a doctor. We should need emergency doctors pretty much only if we get in a car wreck or have some big accident. We need a good orthopedic. We need a good trauma surgeon. We need a good ICU for those accidents. But that's not the majority of Americans. This chronic disease management that we're all doing, it just doesn't work well.
We've all just been, give me a pill.
Everybody wants a quick fix.
Sure.
We see the results of that. I quoted the diabetes statistics earlier, and it's only going to get worse. Cancer rates, heart disease rates, everything's going to get worse because we're barking up the wrong tree.
You make so much sense. It's scary.
Well, until you actually see these patients get well, I mean, that's why these doctors change their mind. They come shadow with us, and they see these patients, and, I mean, it's just unbelievable. So everyone ends up wanting to switch into functional medicine. I don't blame them. It's the fastest growing specialty in America. And if we could just get insurance to pay for it, it'd grow even faster.
That's what I was fixing to say. I'm glad you brought that up. I wish we'd talked about that a little earlier. That's something that needs to be worked on, because you certainly do a great service, and it's so funny talking to you now. I've heard about you through But Dr. Ben Edwards, this has been a pleasure for me. I really enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
I'm kind of glad we took the day off. I got to sit and visit with you.
Don't run off
as soon as you get off. You got a few minutes. I hope you can wait on me to get off. I'll be off here in a couple minutes. I just want to visit with you before you get out of here. Dr. Ben Edwards, you have a phone number they can get a hold of you?
Area code 806-771-1160.
Folks, if you're looking for, and I hate to even say alternative, but if you're looking for a good doctor that looks at things the holy way and the right way, the way I look at it, I mean, we were raised that way to start with. But Dr. Ben Edwards, man, what a pleasure this has been for me. I don't know, I might have bored everybody to death in my part of it, but, man, you've got so much good information.
And, folks,
let me tell you, he's a perfect gentleman, such a fun person to talk to. This no cowboy looks to me like.
Well, my brother-in-law is. He rode that bronc this weekend at that rodeo, and I thought, man, I don't know how he does that. I get whipping around on the back of that bronc. But I play cowboy every now and then.
Well, but I always wanted to be a cowboy. I rodeoed a little bit in Tech and thought I wanted to ride a bull. And I got on that thing, and I asked the good Lord, if you'll get me off this thing, I'll never do it again. Well, he got me off of it, all right. That didn't take long. And I ain't got back on one.
There you go. You kept the promise.
I kept the promise. Dr. Ben Edwards, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Checking out, folks. I think, I'm anxious to talk to him off mic. But I'll get your card, and if we get any calls, I'll certainly let him know. Dr. Ben Edwards.